Hello, I'm Sebastian. Welcome to Nine Gnar Trees podcast. Today, I will summarize and review the book, Pandemic 1928, Eyewitness Accounts from the Greatest Medical Holocaust in Modern History, by Katherine Arnold, revisits the influenza catastrophe that tore through the world at the end of World War I. Rather than treating the crisis as a sterile medical event, the book emphasizes lived experience, drawing on diaries, letters, journalism, and official records to reconstruct how ordinary people and overwhelmed institutions faced a fast-moving, poorly understood killer. Arnold places the outbreak in its historical setting: wartime censorship, mass troop movements, crowded cities, and fragile public health systems. The result is a narrative that links individual tragedies to wider failures in governance and communication, showing how fear, rumor, and denial traveled alongside the virus. By foregrounding voices from hospitals, homes, and public offices, the book makes the scale of loss feel immediate while also explaining why 1928 became a turning point for modern medicine and public health thinking. It is both a social history of disease and a cautionary account of how societies respond under extreme pressure. I will give you key takeaways from this book. Firstly, the world that made a pandemic possible. A central topic is how the conditions of 1928 created an ideal environment for disaster. The influenza did not arrive in a vacuum. The world was mobilized for total war, moving soldiers across continents in crowded ships and trains, concentrating people in camps, factories, and urban housing, and straining food supply and medical staffing. Arnold connects these pressures to the speed and reach of contagion, showing how the same infrastructure built for war inadvertently served the virus. The book also highlights how limited laboratory science, patchy surveillance, and inconsistent reporting left authorities without clear answers. In many places, leaders had to rely on fragmentary information and improvised measures, often too late. The study matters because it explains why the pandemic looked different from place to place, and why it could appear to vanish and return in waves. By treating the outbreak as a product of social and political systems, not merely biology, the book clarifies that preparedness is not only about hospitals and medicines. It is also about transportation policy, workplace conditions, housing density, supply chains, and the ability of governments to see reality clearly in a crisis. Secondly, eyewitness testimony and the human scale of mass death. Another major focus is the power of eyewitness accounts to convey what statistics cannot. Arnold uses personal narratives to depict the suddenness of illness, the terror of breathing failure, and the whiplash of communities shifting from normal routines to emergency improvisation. These voices illuminate how families tried to care for one another when professional help was scarce and how grief multiplied when funerals, mourning rituals, and even basic companionship were disrupted. The accounts also reveal the moral and emotional burdens placed on nurses, doctors, clergy, and volunteers, many of whom faced impossible triage decisions and relentless exposure. By stitching together reports from different settings, the book shows a spectrum of experiences: crowded city wards, rural households without physicians, and public institutions struggling to maintain order. The testimony-driven approach also exposes inequality, as access to care and the ability to isolate depended heavily on money, occupation, and living conditions. This topic matters because it helps readers understand pandemics as collective trauma. The book suggests that remembering individual stories is not sentimentalism. It is a way to grasp how policy choices and social structures translate into lived outcomes for real people. Thirdly, medicine under pressure limits, improvisation, and learning. Arnold explores how 1928 tested the medical knowledge and capacity of the time. Clinicians faced a disease that could appear mild one day and lethal the next, with complications like pneumonia overwhelming bodies and hospitals alike. The book describes an era when antibiotics did not exist, and supportive care was often basic, so outcomes depended on nursing, hydration, warmth, rest, and sheer luck. In that context, communities experimented with makeshift hospitals, volunteer staffing, and repurposed public buildings to handle surges. The narrative also addresses confusion over causation and treatment, with competing theories and inconsistent practices reflecting the scientific uncertainty of the moment. By focusing on what practitioners could and could not do, Arnold underscores why public health measures, communication, and social cooperation were so critical. This topic is valuable for modern readers because it reframes progress. Medical innovation matters, but so do systems that deliver care during crises. The story of 1928 becomes an argument for resilience in logistics, staffing, and planning, alongside research. It also shows how hard-earned lessons emerged from painful experience, shaping later approaches to surveillance, emergency response, and population health. Fourthly, communication, censorship, and the battle for public trust. A defining theme is how information, or the lack of it, shaped the pandemic. The wartime atmosphere encouraged censorship and optimistic messaging, and Arnold highlights the consequences when officials downplayed danger or delayed decisive action. mixed signals about risk and responsibility fostered rumor, panic, and skepticism, while communities struggled to decide whether to close schools, limit gatherings, or continue economic life. The book illustrates that public compliance depends on trust and clarity, especially when interventions are disruptive. Eyewitness materials show how quickly people notice contradictions between official reassurance and what they saw in streets, workplaces, and hospitals. This gap could erode legitimacy and hinder cooperation at the worst possible moment. Arnold also examines the role of newspapers and public notices in spreading guidance, amplifying fear, or rallying volunteerism. The topic resonates because it links pandemic outcomes to governance transparent communication. Timely admission of uncertainty and consistent messaging can save lives. The 1920-18 experience demonstrates that even strong medical responses can be undermined by weak information strategies. It also suggests that telling the truth early is not merely ethical. It is practical crisis management that helps communities coordinate behavior and sustain solidarity. Lastly, aftermath memory. And what 1908 teaches today. The book also considers what happened after the waves receded, how survivors and societies processed loss, and why the pandemic was often overshadowed by the war in public memory. Arnold points to the long tail of consequences, from orphaned children and altered family structures to economic disruption and lingering health effects. The discussion of remembrance is not just historical. It probes why societies sometimes minimize mass death once immediate danger passes, and how that forgetting can weaken future preparedness. By returning repeatedly to personal accounts, the narrative insists that lessons are carried not only in medical journals, but also in cultural memory and institutional habit. This topic frames 1918 as a case study for the present, emphasizing patterns that recur across outbreaks, early denial, unequal exposure, overwhelmed care systems, and the tension between individual liberty and collective safety. Arnold encourages readers to see pandemics as stress tests that reveal underlying social fractures and administrative strengths. The enduring value of the book lies in connecting those insights to practical awareness planning, communication, mutual aid, and respect for evidence. The aftermath in this telling is a reminder that recovery is not simply the end of illness, but the rebuilding of trust, services, and shared meaning. In conclusion, this book suits readers who want a deeply human history of the 1918 influenza, including general history fans, public health students, medical professionals, and anyone interested in how societies behave under extreme strain. It is also a strong choice for readers who prefer narrative-driven nonfiction, because the eyewitness focus turns a global event into a sequence of tangible experiences, decisions, and consequences. The practical benefit is perspective. Arnold shows how pandemics are shaped as much by communication, logistics, and social inequality as by microbes. That broader view can help readers evaluate modern health debates more clearly, recognize the importance of trust and timely action, and appreciate the role of community support when systems are overwhelmed. Compared with similar books that lean heavily on epidemiology or policy analysis, this one stands out for the immediacy of its sources and its ability to balance personal testimony with historical context. The result is not only informative but memorable, giving readers language and examples to understand fear, rumor, altruism, and institutional failure in a crisis. It is worth buying because it makes the past feel usable, offering enduring lessons without pretending that simple answers exist. If you would like to support Catherine Arnold, you can buy the book through the Amazon link I've provided in the podcast description. After reading the book, please let me know what you think and share your thoughts. See you around.